recap conversations, but I'm not waiting until Monday. It's a big weekend again. You know, every summer weekend is big. So had to get to Neil Pessin in the shadow of Bell's the One coming to New York and winning the Honorable Miss. A terrific ride by Corey Lannery, judging what was going on in front of him. And she comes home and wears down Lake Avenue, who ran very well for Bill Mott. And Neil Pessin joins us. Neil, congratulations.
Thank you very much. We had a lovely day at Saratoga, as they say.
Well, first time here, and first starter sent out, and could not have gone any better. I mean, talk about what the expectation was, what the strategy, etc.
The expectations were to win. I was very confident going in. I didn't think anyone could beat her, to be honest with you. I got a little nervous when I saw the track wasn't playing really to her kind of race. Speed was holding pretty good. And then when they went 22-4, and she was last. But I just thought she was the best horse in the race, and she proved she was.
No doubt. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, too, kind of doing a recap of yesterday, one of the parts of this, Neil, that was really evident was Corey Lannery, you know, letting her settle, get comfortable. But then he made clearly a judgment on the backstretch that he needed to make up some ground at a certain point as the leaders were heading into the turn. And I thought that was, you know, probably where he wins the race.
Yeah, we kind of talked about it before, and the only thing I really told him was just don't put her in a position where she can't win.
Right.
And he rode a perfect race on her, cut the corner, bounced her out, and then came running. And when she gets head-to-head with a horse, it's hard to beat her.
She wins. Yeah, they called it a neck. I mentioned earlier that it felt like, you know, it felt like it was a pretty, you know, by the time she got her shoulder, up to the muzzle of Lake Avenue, that, you know, that she was a clear winner. First graded stake win of her 5-year-old season, but she continues to build a really nice resume for you and for the Lothenbachs.
Yeah, her first two races, she didn't have the best of trips either time. At Kingland, her first out of the year, she was second, just got beat to Kamari, but really never got a shot to get outside. She was just trapped in there, and there's no chance to get her out. And then at Churchill, they went a real slow pace in front of her, and she was way back and had to come through on the inside instead of getting to the outside where she's better. So I think she could have actually been 3-for-3, or at least 2 out of 3 with a second, with good trips in all of them. Well, she won the Roxalina too, so yeah. Could have been 3 out of 4 with a second, or 4 out of 4 with just some luck.
Now she's 9-for-19, and she's got a penchant for winning. And when unless circumstances are very much against her in terms of pace, she puts her run in. Neil, talk about working your way back to the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint and the path you'll take from here on in.
Well, that's kind of why we ran here, because we were working back, and with the shipping from Chicago up to here, I figured it'd be easier for her to run in this race and give her a little time in between the next race, because we ran in the Ballerina, then we'd be quick back on all the races. So I decided to go here with the Thoroughbred Club of America being our next start at Kingland. That'll to win and you're in, and then on to the Breeders' Cup from there.
Sounds like a tremendous plan, and I hate to even ask this question. I'm sort of anticipating, I guess it might depend on the result at Del Mar at the end of the year, but where's everybody's head at retiring her, or at the end of the season, or continuing on?
It depends on who you ask. One faction that wants to retire and breed, and another faction wants to keep racing. But my guess would be, and I don't know, because we'll discuss it after the Breeders' Cup, but Mr. Lothenbach likes to run.
Yep.
And we'll just see, you know, if everything's good with her like it is right now and there's no issues or anything, then my guess would be that she would run another year, but I do not know that. So, but if she's doing good and training good like she has been, then I would guess he would probably run another year. But, you know, all that will probably be decided after she runs in the Breeders' Cup.
Well, she has been an absolute stalwart and pleasure. You know, talk about what she means for you, and you know, to come, and also to come here, Neil, and win at Saratoga.
Well, I'm tied right now for leading percentage trainer of all time at Saratoga, and Bell's tied for leading percentage wins of horses all time at Saratoga. And so that's pretty nice to be one for one for both of us. But I'm just happy for her because, I'll be honest, she really hasn't gotten the respect that I think she deserves. When they talk about the top sprint fillies in the country, she never gets mentioned. Even in the Eclipse voting last year, she didn't get it, you know, the top three, which I thought she deserved to be. And so I was more happy for her than for me. Don't get me wrong, I was extremely happy for me, but I just think she deserves more credit than what they give her. I think she's one of the top sprint mares in the country. I said that before the race, and I'm sticking to my guns after the race.
You know, she's admirable and on so many fronts. When you look at all the different places, you know, you've taken her everywhere. I mean, you go back to the three-year-old season, and you know, you were ambitious to take her to the La Brea, and you know, you come to New York with her, and obviously, you know, the Keeneland and Churchill is the, you know, is the lion's share of her career. But you know, she's tried
she's traveled, and what other people don't realize too, she's won turf, dirt, poly, short, long.
Yep.
And she's won stakes on turf and dirt, short and long. So I don't know what more you can ask of a filly. You know, the trainer was probably pretty dumb, take a while to figure out exactly what she wanted. That's why she had so many wins doing other things.
Well, and on that, actually, on that topic for a second, she's notably, she's 5 for 5 at 6.5, which is a funny distance. I mean, first of all, there's not, you know, there's not an unlimited number of 6.5 furlong races, but sprinters can be, you know, very specialized, and you know, the 6.5 to 7 is very different than 3/4.
Well, she's won 5 for 5 at 3/4, but she's also won at 7/8.
Yep.
And I think it just pays scenario and how the race sets up and what kind of trip she gets. But she can do either or. And I'm not 100% sure she can't go long. But I would look really bad if I ran her long and she didn't run well. So since she's doing so good sprinting. But 3/4 to 7/8 anywhere in there is kind of her wheelhouse right now. And it really doesn't matter. As long as the race sets up well for her and she gets a good trip is the main thing. She's going to be tough against anybody. I don't care who's in there.
It is, you know, and my PPs, my printed PPs, you know, only went back to the Acorn, but I just pulled up the full formulator PPs, and when you mentioned the configurations and the surfaces, and had forgotten, she broke her maiden at Arlington on the synthetic, as mentioned, and she won the Black Cat Lacombe going a mile on the grass as a 3-year-old. So amazing, really amazing.
Yeah, she's just a special filly, and she always gives you 110% no matter what, and she shows up every time she runs. If she gets beat, it's usually not her fault. It's either mine, the jocks, or somebody's fault, but I never blame her because she always gives a big effort as she can.
Well,
as I told someone
really
the other day, she's 100% heart and 50% ability.
Bell's the one, and the ninth win of her career, and as I mentioned earlier, stakes winner now at 2, 3, 4, and 5, and that's a pretty nice resume. Graded stake winner at 3, 4, and 5 as well, and two very nice targets ahead, the TCA and the Breeders' Cup. And Neil, you mentioned, you know, bringing her over from Chicago, where you're based for the summer, with the situation with everybody vacating the backstretch at Churchill. you got some horses coming up, and in fact, and I, you know, I just got off the phone with Mike Campbell, by the way, agonizing over the situation at Arlington.
Yeah, it's not a pretty situation up there right now. Everyone's kind of doom and gloom. All we can do is hope that whoever buys the track may want to keep part of it as a racetrack. But, I mean, you can't force anyone to do anything that buys it. And there's some developers looking at it. I know the Bears are looking at it. There are some racetrack people looking at it. But it's just a question of what Churchill wants to do and who has the highest bid and guarantees the most money for them. So it'd be a shame to bulldoze that building. It's a really nice facility.
Exactly. You're coming back. You actually double entered Fine Cotton, that curling 3-year-old that's trying to find herself.
Well, she's entered today, main track only. So, and because the race didn't go on the poly, and then they brought it back, and we're back in on the main track tomorrow. So that's probably where we'll end up running, is tomorrow on the main track. And she's, this filly has shown as much ability as almost any horse has ever had. And in the afternoons, it's all mental with her. She just mentally can't do it. Ability-wise, she's very, very talented. But I just don't know what's going to happen in the afternoons. And sometimes, if you just run those fillies a few times, they may come around, and sometimes they don't. I'm hoping she'll eventually turn the light bulb on and run to her ability. But I have no clue what's going to happen Friday. That's how good a trainer I am. I have no clue.
she was 450,000.
And I like to gamble a little bit, and I bet on her first time out, but I don't never let him get me twice.
Well, you know, you keep her, you're keeping her at the maiden special level, and she, you know, she's a curling for 450. I mean, when you say mental, I mean, does she get intimidated? Is she temperamental?
I think she just psychs herself out. And we're working on that with schooling a lot and trying to get her relaxed in between horses galloping. And I mean, we're trying different things with her, different methods of bringing her into the race, just to see if we can find something that settles her down a little bit. But if any little thing goes wrong, she just gets all hyper and just runs her race mentally. Physically, ability-wise, I mean, she's probably one of the best maidens in the country. But when it comes time to race, mentally, she just can't handle it right now. And hopefully some of those horses will take a few starts and come around and start running to their ability. And when she wins one, if she ever does decide she's going to be okay with it, I mean, she could be a graded stakes horse. I mean, that's the kind of talent she has.
Wow.
We just have to figure out how to get it out of her.
Well, they're like any athlete. There's and certainly this, you know, this week, easy to make an equivalency with human athletes and you know, the pressures and you know, the mental aspect. I mean,
Well, you had two Simone Biles, and you had the tennis player from Japan. That's supposed to be so good that went out in an early round.
No, it's a it and with horses, it's not like you can work. You know, you can't pull in a sports psychologist to talk to them.
No, you can't talk to them. You talk to them in different ways, but not word to word what's going on. So, hopefully, I can get it figured out one day. I'm a little slower than most, so it might take me a little longer. but if we get it figured out, she's going to be a really nice filly. But until we do, she's just average at best.
Well, you and Mr. Lothenbach are certainly patient and known for patience, and that included that Tappet gelding, Captain Maestri, who finally graduated at the age of 5 the other day.
In his third start.
So, exactly.
Yeah, he was just a soft-boned horse early on, and just little minor issues kept popping up when he was ready to run. He'd wait till like the work before he's ready to run. And so we'd end up having to give him time off. And I think he's actually going to be better long on the turf. The other day was just his first race back in a while, and I just ran him 7/8 on the poly. I thought it'd be a good fit for him. And he won pretty easily. So
I think he's going to be a pretty nice horse. At least I hope he is. And he's named after a good friend of mine who's a retired captain on the police force that died
right.
a couple years ago.
We talked about this. Yes.
So it was kind of a special win for me just because of his name.
Well, and sometimes, you know, even if that's the only one that they get, you do want them. You do want them to graduate. You want them to have that win. It sounds silly, but yeah, the first objective is to get them to the races, and then a win. I believe me. There's horses of ours that didn't win that kind of eat at you.
Yeah. Well, people don't realize how hard it is to get them to a race.
Yeah.
A lot of them never make it to the races, and then to get them to win is another. Hill you have to go over. So it's not an easy process, and when you get there, you need to appreciate being in the winner's circle, because a lot of people never see it.
Neil Pessin with us off of Bell's the Ones Honorable Miss win. And Neil, one more to ask you about, because I haven't seen him work back, but Ready to Pounce. You tried the Matt win with him off the maiden win, and he actually ran okay in the Matt win. You came back in an allowance, though, and disappointed. Where are you with him?
He had a slight injury in the last race coming out of it, and nothing that requires surgery or anything like that. It's just a time thing. So we're giving him 90 days off at the farm, maybe 120. I may give him an extra 30. We don't know yet. Haven't decided. But I think he's going to be a pretty nice horse when he does come back. And we're just erring on the side of caution. No one could really find anything, but he wasn't 100%, so we just turned him out.
And expect to see
him back this winter.
There's another one in that same vein, that Run Happy, that was part of that group that started breaking their maidens as 3-year-olds. Happy American.
Yep, he had a small, very minor issue after the next to last race, so we gave him a little time and. Not much, just a little bit, and he's come back well. I tried him on the turf at Arlington his last out, and he got in a little trouble. The doc even said, I think I could have won it if I hadn't got stopped. But that being said, he really isn't going to be a turf horse. He's going to be a dirt horse. So when he runs back at Churchill in September, he hopefully will be pretty salty to beat.
Well, things pretty good in that Pessin barn. And Neil, the question everybody's been waiting for: where did you eat last night in Saratoga?
I went to Solvino, I think was the name of it, an Italian place.
Solivo.
It was very good.
Solivo.
Yes. It's right off of Henry Street. I can't remember the name of the street, but corner of Henry and something else.
And
it was a very good restaurant. I was going to go to Stereo Danny, and they wouldn't let me in. So I've got to give them a bad review. They were awful.
Something
about needing a 2-month reservation or something.
Well, almost, actually. Well, you should have reached out to me. We could have probably might have.
I was actually very happy where I went.
Sure.
It was excellent at the Caesar salad and the veal chop parmesan, which was very good.
And
could have fed Goliath.
Well, yeah.
big veal chop.
and granted, you were in a good mood, but we certainly didn't want the dining experience in Saratoga to disappoint you, because there's no greater gourmand in the game than Neil Pessin.
And I actually found a good deli up there too.
Which one?
What was the name of it? It was on Broadway. It's called the Saratoga Broadway Deli.
Oh yeah, the guy. Yes, in fact, brought, when I was laid up with my eye surgery, Avi and Rhoda Friedberg and the Haskins brought over a whole spread from the. I keep forgetting about that about the deli. Good job.
Well, it's kind of sits off to the side, off the main road. It's hard to find if you don't know where it's at. But
that never stops you.
Sandwich and matzo ball soup. So
that a boy. That's our man, Neil. Well done. Congratulations, and we'll look forward to Keeneland and seeing you, and Del Mar too, of course, for Breeders' Cup.
Oh yeah. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Hopefully be talking to you after the Kingland race.
Exactly, exactly. Neil Pessin, everybody, one of the most just affable and likable and easy to root for horsemen in the game. I literally a human divining rod for good food. We'll stay here. It's the bottom of the hour, and let me while Casey gets Dick Powell lined up, let me see what's happening. We got about 5 minutes to Goodwood, and interestingly, the O'Brien filly has taken a ton of money. Joan of Arc is 4-5 over Adaria. How about that? Adaria 2-1. And then you've got Empress Josephine, the other O'Brien, with Frankie, 5-1. 8-1 on Lady Beaufort, Jarvis and Schumark, Nathaniel Mayer. And then you head to 14-1, Roger Varian's Ziyatta. Shadwell, 3-year-old, with Crowley and Tom Markand and Martin Mead have got Technique, a master craftsman filly who's 25-1. So a couple of minutes to the feature, the Nassau, the mile and a quarter, and the last of the big races from Glorious Goodwood. And yesterday's Sussex, I did not get a chance to see any details, any of the aftermath about the potential for alcohol-free to come to Breeders' Cup. Maybe Dick did. And we also haven't talked about Saturday. I haven't even mentioned Saturday's feature. Dick, I think you're there.
Yes, I am. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. And just a couple of minutes, before we talk about yesterday and Saturday, quick thought about this six-pack in the Nassau?
Well, like you, I'm surprised Joan of Arc has taken as much money as she's taken.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting that, so she makes... how do you pronounce the name? Adaria?
Adaria.
Makes her a square price, a fitting price for her. And it's going to be a tactical race, obviously, with six horses. So we will have the jocks playing a big role. This race is relatively new. What they tried to do in England was to add some Group 1 races for older horses, because what was happening is the three-year-old fillies would finish their season, and then instead of racing against males for the rest of their career, they would go to stud, broodmares. So they've had races like this added to the program, and comes up very well. The pictures that come out of Goodwood are just striking. Man, and the number one, the quality is just awesome. And Goodwood just looks like a fascinating race course. It's just fun to watch. So the Glorious Goodwood, this meet goes on till Saturday. And we had the big Goodwood Cup. Unfortunately, Stradivarius scratched with the bad ground, and Holly Doyle won that race. And then yesterday, Alcohol Free won the Sussex Stakes, which is always their classic mile race. And now today we have the filly, the mares, going almost a mile and a quarter. Mile and a quarter. So get to see them, and sure, lots of Breeders' Cup implications coming out of this race.
Did you hear anything yesterday coming out of Alcohol Free's win about considerations for coming to the U.S.?
No, I didn't get a chance to do the race. Usually what I do this time of year is I download individual racing posts, and I didn't get a chance to do that last night and read the follow-ups on the race. But she looked awfully good. Kind of toyed with that field.
Really did. And I put up that. I don't know if you saw the video. I know you're not a Twitterer, but there's an adorable video of her coming, being brought back to the yard, and people lining the streets. It was pretty sweet, cheering, and it just gives you an idea of how, you know, how adored, you know, how just how important it is to. We haven't really had, I guess, probably haven't had that really since Smarty Jones. American Pharoah brought out the people. Certainly that scene for that workout at Saratoga was pretty remarkable. Yeah. But 10,000 at Philly too for Smarty Jones. That Well,
they're loading on my feed. Usually,
let me get mine. And I just had mine down in the lower bar. So let me bring it up. And there we go. Hold on. We have a very sophisticated audio system here that that we crafted from Royal Ascot.
For this absolute cracker, this is the Qatar Nassau Stakes, the Group 1, the fillies and mares, Simon Holt to call them home. And Lady Beaufort's just going to be blindfolded, went to the start very quietly, and she goes straight in for an intriguing Qatar Nassau Stakes, a mile and a quarter, uphill in the early stages, and they're away. Lady Beaufort jumped out alertly, and Kieran Schumacher wants to take her back. And Empress Josephine and Joan of Arc, the two Ain't No Brian runners, are the first two in the early stages, followed by Zayada in third, Technique, then Lady Beaufort, now back in fifth place. And Ordara settles in last in the hands of William Buick. They're fairly well strung out in the early stages. And Joan of Arc now gallops on into a 2.5-3 length lead from stable companion Empress Josephine. Zayada is handy in the blue and white jacket. Then in fourth is Technique, followed by Lady Beaufort, and lastly, Ordaria. So continuing their journey, about to run uphill, and it's the Prix de Diane winner, Joan of Arc, ridden from the front here by Ryan Moore. By a couple of lengths or so to Zayada and Jim Crowley on the outside of Empress Josephine and Frankie Dettori. Kieran Schumacher in the orange cap on Lady Beaufort. Technique on the inside, Tom Marquand and William Buick at the back aboard Ordaria. About to swing round the top turn into the home straight. And Joan of Arc still out in front. Maybe just slackening off the pace a little. A length and a half to Zayada, Empress Josephine. Then Lady Beaufort. Technique on the inside and Ordaria being held up right at the back for a late pounce as they run down towards this final little right-hander. And Joan of Arc stretching on by a length and a half. Zayada covering the move, followed by Empress Josephine. Lady Beaufort travels well in behind these from Technique at the cutaway, and Ordaria at the back. An intriguing race up the home straight. Joan of Arc just nudged along in the lead here. Zayada is cruising up in second. Lady Beaufort poised, then Empress Josephine. Ordaria now asks a question, then Technique. Joan of Arc, Zayada, Lady Beaufort, out wide Ordaria, a furlong and a half left to cover. Lady Beaufort now comes through with her challenge on the outside of Zayada and Joan of Arc as they run inside the final furlong. Lady Beaufort on the near side of Zayada and Joan of Arc as they race up towards the line, and Lady Beaufort goes on. A ladyship gets her Group 1 in the Nassau. Lady Beaufort has won it. Kieran Schumacher punches the air, salutes the crowd. Zayada, Joan of Arc, Technique, Ordaria, and lastly, Empress Josephine.
How about?
What a day this is for Kieran Schumacher and Willie Jarvis.
Wow. Wow. When you see these horses, Euros like this, and you see one power away in the late stages like that, that was really impressive.
She was much the best. Ryan tried to make all the running on Joan of Arc, and they don't have sectional times readily available, so it's hard to tell how fast the pace was. It looked like when she kind of crossed over there at the end, when they made that final turn, I thought she was overstriding. I didn't like the way the four was running. And I was looking at the back of the pack for Adaria, and when she came off cover, she looked like she was going to move, but then Lady Beltorp, who took money, was 7-2. I mean, that's serious money on Lady Beltorp, because she was, what did the bookmakers had her 8-1 earlier in the week.
How about that?
So she, at least in this pool, in the American, well, actually, this is the world pool. And I'll get to that in a minute. But, yeah, she took money. She was 7-2, and the favorite actually went up from 3-5 to even money. So further proof that sometimes horses go up in odds. They don't always go down. A little inside baseball humor there for you, Stevie.
Adaria disappoints here, and like you, I was kind of watching to see her if she was going to quicken, and she was very one-paced, and you know didn't get that, you know, that those strides that seemingly, you know, kind of bound you up into a race to make up ground, and because they were quickening up front too. And obviously Lady Beltorp quickening best of all, Nathaniel Mayer, third choice, 7-2. You mentioned the pools, and what were you alluding to about?
Well, this was part of the world pool this week. All the Goodwood races are being hosted by Hong Kong Jockey Club. So, looking at it right now, the win, the place, the Quinella, and what we call the triple, what they call the tiers, are hosted in Hong Kong. So there's massive liquidity in the pool. So the win pool for this race alone was $1,135,000, and the place pool was $779,000. So there's almost $2 million in the win and place pool. So what that means is when we've had international simulcasting in the past, and I'll give you the example, when I was involved with the first transcontinental simulcasting of the Dubai Racing Carnival, we wound up hosting the pools in South Africa to try to add some liquidity, because if we just have our own pool, it's just not going to be enough, and bettors are going to get turned off because the prices, you know, the pool size is going to be so small. Any kind of bet is going to affect the odds. Well, now, in these races, the Whirlpool races, there's massive money in the pools. So almost $2 million in the win and place pool, seven pools, but $2 million combined. Well, you're not going to have the late odds swings or whatever it is that people are complaining about in these type races, because there's just so much money in them. And it doesn't all show up. I was kind of tracking it during the running, and you know, it grew as we got closer to post time, but one problem we have in America is everyone has the ability to bet at the last second, and therefore everyone tends to bet at the last second. So the money comes crashing in those last couple of flashes, and the odds can be pretty chaotic. So the World Pool pretty much solved that issue, and there's going to be more and more of them. So you're going to see not just this race, but the rest of the Goodwood races today, tomorrow, and Saturday are all part of the Whirlpool being hosted by Hong Kong. So it's a nice feature, and it makes these races just that much more attractive, because small pools, not a factor. Don't have to worry about it.
There was chatter yesterday, in fact, on this topic, that the pools may have closed a little early yesterday. Did you hear any see anything about this?
No, I did not.
No. Saratoga yesterday. I saw a couple of comments at Thoroughgraph at Jerry's board, and that it seemed that the pools that there wasn't the late odd fluctuation late, that the things stayed static, and the suggestion was made that the pools, you know, closed, you know, well in advance of the bell ringing.
Are we talking to Saratoga races?
Yeah. No, Saratoga. Saratoga.
Yes, that's. I believe that's true.
Yeah, and I haven't. When I get over there today, I want to ask. It certainly, you know, to the everyday public, to the everyday horse player, it would come as a, you know, it would come as a welcome, you know, relief from, you know, you and I have spent, I've spent as much time with you as I have with, like, Andy, you know, trying to explain, you know, the percentages of the pool as it comes in, and the factors that are involved in the, you know, in the perception of late odds changes, and, you know, the biggest issue being the, you know, the ability of, you know, the computer assisted wagering systems to you know, put all their bets in electronically in a manner that, you know, that the, you know, the interface can't possibly match. I mean, you're just you know, we're limited to to our hands and how quickly we can, you know, how we, I guess we can build. There is technology. In fact, Dick, you could even talk about AmWager with this, because you know, today is presented by AmWager, and, you know, there is technologies that allow people to, you know, you can, on your interface, you could have your bets ready to go in. I mean, talk about how that actually has evolved in over the years from your, you know, from your viewpoint.
That's been available to everyone, not just big players. Conditional wagering, where you can put bets into a queue and watch them load, watch them do whatever it is you're watching, and if all systems are go, then you press a button and send the bets in. If all systems, if you have some doubts or someone flips at the gate or something crazy happens, then you don't send your bets in. So that's been available for a long time. Part of the discussion about the late odds changes is late odds changes have been happening forever, and will always happen forever. So I know it's frustrating. I know it makes it worse when the odds are being displayed on the television set. And yes, it'd be great if Tote had real time odds, but the Tote is cycling odds way faster than they ever did. So I just don't understand if our industry is going to be leery and non-supportive of computer players, why are other racing jurisdictions that are succeeding far better than America with their betting, why do they welcome them?
Is it strictly a matter of pool, you know, of pool liquidity? Is it simple as or?
That's part of it. And you could also argue we have too much racing. We take the pie and slice it into too many tiny slices, so that you have issues like that. Did you see Saturday's sixth race, the number one horse? Went from 16-1 to 10-1. It was a Todd Pletcher and Mike Rapoli horse.
The Saturday sixth was the maiden race.
Yes,
the maiden race. No, I didn't see it in real time. But that horse was, and I don't remember checking the. I was watching because that started. It was part of that middle pick five, and I didn't. I don't remember checking the will pays, the double will pays, to see what, you know, what the imputed odds might be. But if that horse, that horse was 6-to-1 morning line, so if that horse went from 10-to-1 or from 16-to-1 to 10-to-1, it was a horse that would figure, right, to be in that range.
It was a correction. It was where it should have been.
There you go.
But instead, all these nefarious reasons. And it's also entirely possible it was not necessarily computer bets that drove the price down. Same thing with Ferenc Fire a couple of years ago in the Dwyer.
Right.
Went from 7-to-1 to 7-to-2. I mean, there were some big bettors. No one's saying they're not big bettors. They're not necessarily computer-assisted wagers. So it's a more complicated issue than people understand it. It's a tough issue to talk to the public about because they know what they see, and then it does raise the specter. Well, why did the odds change after the race went off? Well, the bets were made before the race, but they weren't tabulated until the final flash. So yes, that does happen, and it looks like some players are betting after the race, which is not true. Example I give is, you know, election night, 9 o'clock at night, the polls close. All right, who's president? I don't know. We don't have real time voting. All the precincts have to report and all that stuff.
Right.
So same thing with racing, and then the system goes out and scans batches of bets from all the sites and pulls them in and computes the odds. It happens pretty quickly, but it's still not instantaneous, and it's clearly not real time. So it's an issue. I think it's been made way too negative an issue without the explanation. Like when I explain the issue to people, they kind of get it because someone has taken the time to explain it, but I haven't demonized the issue. I'm not going to demonize computer players in the pool because I think they're... I'll give you a quick example. Many years ago, there was a speaker at the TRA simulcast convention, and it turns out he was a runner for Billy Walters. Billy Walters was the biggest sports bettor probably ever out in Vegas. He had computer teams handicapping, which is the easy part. The hard part is getting your bets in. And this guy was a runner who went to various casinos, was making bets, and eventually they will kick him out because he's not a regular customer, he's not playing cards and table games, and therefore he's just taking money out of the sports book, so he'll get banned. Now he has to go somewhere else and stuff like that. Well, the guy's speech kind of took a dramatic turn because he said with racing, the problem isn't the whales. The problem is you don't have enough whales. That if you only have a limited amount of whales and they're feeding off each other, that's not healthy. And he was, you know, I tend to agree with what he said. It was just interesting hearing his perspective. Similar thing, computer bettors are handicapping sports, and they're doing well, and then they're trying to get their bets in, and it's a fight with the sports betting. Well, in the horse races, big bettors don't have to fight to get their bets in. It's a parimutuel system that they're welcome to bet into, and as long as they're betting according to the rules of racing, that should be the end of it. But it's not.
Exactly.
And an example I've given, and I spoke at University of Arizona one year, and I said, do you want the Dow Jones of 1953, or do you want the NASDAQ of 2021? There are many people in the street that raise their hand and say, I want Dow Jones of 1953.
Well, that's a statement in of itself.
Yeah, well, it is. That's the context. So, do we have... can I talk about my boy who passed away?
Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Juan DeSantis was well known to many, many people in both standardbred and thoroughbred. His standardbred background was director racing at the Meadowlands, the Red Mile, general manager at Saratoga Harness, Monticello. I mean, you can't name the tracks that Warren had worked at. Warren was the one who got me into RGS, Racing and Gaming Services, 17 years ago, because he was a director with RGS, and just knew everyone. You've been to conferences with Warren there. Steve mentioned he lives in Greenwich. Warren starts talking about architecture. he would know something. No matter where you're from, he would know somebody was from there or something about that place. And just fantastic guy. Well, Warren had been battling issues for quite a while. I talked to him the week before Tuesday night, because if there was an NBA game on, we would always talk. And as the playoffs went on, we'd be talking as much as we could. But in the meantime, he was failing and did pass away early Friday morning. I still am not positive of the arrangement. And in fact, while we're on, I got a call from probably his wife, recognizing the number. But there will be some service up here. I'm not sure what the details are. I would look at the Daily Gazette for that. But it's just Warren touched a lot of people in both industries, in basketball. As far as I know, Pat Riley will be delivering the eulogy, because Warren and Pat grew up together along with Paul Heiner, and they played ball together and remained lifelong friends. And, you know, just a sad time for his passing, because normally he would make his way up here and, you know, go to the track and see friends and stuff like that. And with Warren, it was, you know, a story and then another story. And then, yeah, we always had a lot of fun. It's going to be really strange going places and not having him there at dinner. And that's the easy part for us, the family. It's obviously a lot tougher. But Warren DeSantis did pass away last week at the age of 75.
I appreciate it, Dick. And you know, so there's so many. It's very hard, actually. I try to get to as many. I count on, you know, a lot of the regulars, and you know, you had indicated what, maybe 6-8 weeks ago, that you know, it wasn't well, but. It's hard. There's so many people in so many different arenas that you know, the game is so intertwined, and there's so many. It's a, you know, it's an industry of relationships, and so I appreciate you making sure that Warren DeSantis is acknowledged. And same, that this goes for anybody listening too. If there's, you know, somebody in the game that, you know, you want to pass along and make sure that they get acknowledged, don't hesitate to reach out to me. I appreciate it.
And if you know someone who might be struggling, reach out to them. And I know it's hard, and I know you might catch them at a bad time. And what I would tell people with Warren is just call him. If he's not feeling well, he's not going to answer the phone. But he really would like to hear from different people. And that kind of isolation gets tough for people. So, you know, you got me calling. I a couple weeks ago on the phone, and he was in a hospital room at that point, and I said, is there a clock on the wall? And he said, yeah. I said, well, it just struck midnight, Warren. I got to go to bed. We've been talking for 2 hours. You know, because there was an NBA doubleheader that night, so we could gab away during the game and stuff. So I got to go, man. It's after midnight. But it's that mind activity that keeps him going. The body's failing, but the mind isn't. So Rob Perry from RGS, myself, other people would be checking in with him constantly. Paul Heiner, Pat would call him, and, you know, just it really means a lot. I know it's awkward. Do it anyway.
Yeah. Yep. Point well made. Thanks, Dick. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for letting me about it. And anyone who won, the Matisse brothers obviously knew him. And just like, who didn't know Warren? You know, raise your hand if you didn't know Warren. It'd be pretty small group.
Dick, we'll see you out there. Haven't seen you yet, but we'll catch this weekend. We're gonna see you. You got anything today, by the way? You got anything you like?
I did look. Just about finished with Saturday, but I did look in race two. There is showers coming, but I don't think they're going to come till
after
later
four.
In the card. Race,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Race two, number one, Cold Hard Cash.
Yeah.
Johnny needs to get going. Gets a nice live mount here for Linda Rice and Barry Schwartz breaking from the rail. Could be tough. Cold Hard Cash, race two, number one.
I used that race as well as the DePaula play of the day for Capital OTB, and I went outside and acknowledged in my little video that absolutely Cold Hard Cash the one to beat, and even Cold Hard Cash is not the favorite. The favorite Straw Into Gold, the Clement, but I ended up with Call Me Harry, closing sprinter type, and there's a bunch of stretch outs in that race, and I just recently Andy put up the scratches. There's a couple of key scratches actually later in the card. Most notably, the most important scratch comes in the seventh because Abiding Star, you know, for so long, Ned Allard's, you know, wonderful. How old is he now? He's got to be six or seven. Abiding Star, eight, making his 57th, was going to make his 57th start today. But Jeff Engelhart scratches, and he was an important part of the pace. So everybody should reevaluate what they're doing in the seventh. And the MTOs have been left in because of the potential for these showers. And my forecast on Dark Star was the great racehorse. Dark Sky? Dark Sky. They are saying it's closer to 3 o'clock light rain. So we'll see. Hopefully we get lucky, and you never know with these storms if they, you know, sometimes they're tracking towards Saratoga, and with the winds between the mountains, sometimes it drives it south of us. Sometimes they'll ride north. So we, you know, there's no, and I'm sure there's people saying, oh, it's not going to be anything. We don't know what it's going to be. So let's hope for the best.
Sounds good to me.
Dick, we'll see you soon. Dick Powell, everybody. And
okay, Steve, take care.
I appreciate it. Let's take a top of the hour break, our last of the morning. Lenny Shulman. Lenny was walking around the racetrack looking for me, and I explained that I ended up kind of flablunged, as we say, with this thing with my foot. I do have to get to the track. We're in the third. Kid Chocolate's, it's a tough group. Good grief. Non-winners of three lifetime for 35, but he, you know what? He could get an advantageous trip, maybe. If Benji, I think if he gains a little position, you know, and he's very one-paced. So once you get him started, you know, he'll plug along. It's going to be a big price, but and he ran well here last summer, ran very well. So that was the thinking. But he's going to have to get back to those races, and even that seems like it's not going to be enough. Not with You know, Clement's got that Montauk Summer, who figures tough, and Mystery Bank, Safi Joseph, you know, tough spot, but still fun to be, you know, fun to have one. But then I got to go get this tetanus shot before I lose it, before I lose the leg. Back after this, Lenny Shulman, who's going to give me grief for not being here and being there. Lenny's got a book signing tomorrow. He's in town, and it's going to be all Lenny all the time. He's going to be on TV with us as well, with Seth and I on Sunday. But we'll catch up with Lenny and Nick Tamaro as well, get some plays from Nick. I put up his little video of him calling last night at Sam Houston, the quarters, kind of fun. He's got a tagline. Nick's got a tagline. Back after this, Lenny Shulman.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on